Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here to crack open a stack of sources, get you instantly well-informed. Today, we're diving into a world that, you know, it's often seen through the lens of romance, luxury. But actually offers a fascinating look at global economics. Supply chains. We're talking diamonds.
Right.
These aren't just symbols of love. They're incredibly sensitive economic indicators. And lately, their market has been, well, anything but stable. We've seen some pretty dramatic shifts. Surprising trends, too.
Absolutely. It's been quite a ride.
So our deep dive today is all about understanding what truly makes a diamond valuable. We'll explore the most expensive ones of the world, what drives those astronomical prices.
Yeah.
And the complex forces shaping their market right now. Our goal really is to help you figure out why some diamonds are incredible investments, while others, well, they just simply aren't.
Exactly. And for you, the listener, our mission is kind of to cut through all the sparkle and get to the core of it.
Yeah.
Understanding that nuanced difference between, you know, a glittering accessory and a true investment grade asset.
A shortcut, basically.
Yeah, a shortcut to being well-informed about this unique sector. It's often misunderstood. And we're drawing heavily today from a recent source, top 21 most expensive diamonds in the world as of 2025. Gives a fantastic snapshot.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Our sources keep saying 2023 was a tumultuous year for the diamond industry. That's a strong word.
It really was.
So you see major players like De Beers, Alrosa, taking drastic measures, price drops, halting mining. What does that fundamentally tell us about the market's health? Was it just supply overwhelming demand or something else going on?
That's a great question. And it really wasn't simple. What's fascinating here is that it was a convergence of significant events, all pointing to a deeply imbalanced market. You saw De Beers, you know, one of the giants, drop their prices substantially, 10% to 15%.
Oh.
Yeah. And simultaneously, Russia's Alrosa, another major producer, they put a moratorium on mining, just stop production.
To try and soak up the excess.
Exactly. To actively decrease market saturation. And then adding to that, India, a key global hub for polishing diamonds.
Right. They handle most of them.
They do. And they halted rough diamond imports altogether. I mean, these were all major distress signals.
It really sounds like a domino effect. Everyone reacting to a fundamental problem.
Mm-hmm.
I remember during the COVID market frenzy, there was that huge rush, right? Drove up demand.
Oh, absolutely.
Did that ultimately lead to the industry maybe overcorrecting on supply?
You're spot on connecting it to that post-COVID surge. That period saw, well, unprecedented demand, and it led to an oversupply that the market just couldn't absorb once things started to normalize. But here's the crucial insight, the really important bit. This sharp decline in prices, it was typically clustered around those sub 1 to 2 carat diamonds.
The ones most people buy for rings.
Pretty much. The ones in the retail sector. And these are not considered rare, not in the grand scheme of things. Which raises a tough point for consumers, right? If you're buying an average engagement ring from a retailer, you can typically expect it to lose 25% to 50% of its value immediately. Upon resale, yeah, it's a stark reality check. Not all diamonds are created equal when you're talking investment.
Wow. Okay, so it's basically like buying a brand new car.
Mm-hmm.
And losing half its value the second you drive it off the lot. That really puts the retail diamond market into a whole new perspective.
It really does.
And speaking of things that don't hold their value,
mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the diamond in the lab. Lab-grown diamonds, LGDs, they've really exploded in popularity, haven't they?
Oh, definitely.
Especially with younger generations seeing them as a like a credible alternative.
Indeed, LGDs are a significant factor now. They retail at around, what, 65% to 80% of a similarly sized and quality natural diamond?
Which sounds appealing.
It certainly is, price-wise, for many people. However, and this is the critical distinction we really need to hammer home, LGDs do not hold their value.
Why not?
Because they aren't scarce. Simple as that. Supply can easily adjust to demand. And what's more, the production process itself, it's becoming progressively cheaper.
Ah, okay. So technology is driving the cost down.
Exactly. So it's really hard to imagine a scenario where LGDs would suddenly increase in price or genuinely compete with the costliest natural diamonds as, you know, true investment pieces. They offer a beautiful, ethical, more affordable option for jewelry, which is fantastic for consumers, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But they fundamentally lack that crucial scarcity needed for investment appreciation. Makes them a very, very different asset class.
That distinction is absolutely paramount. Okay. So with all this talk of scarcity and investment, many of you listening might be wondering, if retail diamonds and lab-grown diamonds don't appreciate, what kinds of diamonds do? What makes a diamond an actual investment-grade asset?
Yeah.
Something that holds or even gains value?
Right. The core factors are always, always rarity and demand. Always.
Rarity and demand.
Yep. For a diamond to hold or appreciate in price, it needs to be genuinely rare and highly desired by a specific market, collectors, investors.
It's about finding that sweet spot, you know,
where extreme scarcity meets fervent interest.
What makes them rare? What are the characteristics?
Okay, there are basically three main characteristics that make diamonds hold or increase in price. First, fancy colored diamonds.
Okay.
We're talking about the really vibrant blues, yellows, greens, and especially pinks. Our source highlights that 6 out of the top 10 costliest diamonds on that list, they're pink.
6 out of 10.
Yeah. These are incredibly scarce, strikingly beautiful, and they consistently fetch millions.
Okay, so color is huge. What else?
Second category, investment-grade white diamonds. These are the colorless stones, but, and this is key, they need to be 5 carats and above.
Not the typical 1 or 2 carat size.
Exactly. Those much more common than people often realize. So 5 carats plus an exceptional cut, clarity, and carat weight, the whole package.
Right. Top quality across the board.
Precisely. And third, diamonds with unique histories or characteristics.
Ah, the story element.
Exactly. This can mean stones with fascinating backstories like royal ownership, celebrity ownership.
Provenance.
Provenance, exactly. Or simply record-breaking sizes that make them truly one of a kind.
So it's not just about the sparkle then. It's about the story, the inherent uniqueness. This combination of factors creating an almost unrepeatable asset.
That's a great way to put it.
And our sources also bring up another vital factor for any investment, right? Market liquidity.
Mm-hmm. Crucial.
A piece can be unique, but if no one actually wants to buy it, its value is just theoretical, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yet if it's too common, then you face intense competition when you try to sell. It sounds like a delicate balance, being desirable, but also accessible enough to actually trade.
It's a very delicate balance, yes, between being desirable and finding a buyer when you need to.
All right, so for those listening now who are thinking, okay, I get the why, but how about the how? What are some practical tips? If you're venturing into this space, looking for an investment-grade diamond in, say, 2025.
Okay, yeah, let me give you 3 quick actionable tips. First, and this sounds basic, but buy low.
Classic investment rule.
Mm. It is, but it's especially critical in the diamond world. Diamonds go through so many intermediaries before they reach retail. Each step adds a markup. If you buy at retail, well, too many people have already taken their cut. So you need to aim higher up the supply chain, wholesalers, maybe even directly from cutters if you have the connections. That maximizes your potential return.
Makes sense. Cut out the middlemen. What's number 2?
Second, think about this. To mount or not to mount?
Ah, setting the diamond.
Exactly. While it's tempting to set an investment diamond in a piece of jewelry, you know, so you can enjoy it.
Sure, wear it.
Consider that your personal taste might clash with the potential buyers. That could reduce demand, delay a sale. Keeping the diamond loose is often the preferred option for investors.
Because it preserves its universal appeal. Lets the next owner decide.
Precisely. It allows the next owner to decide on the setting. Keeps options open.
Okay. And the third tip.
And third, absolutely critical, demand certification. Appraising a diamond, that requires specialized knowledge. Always, always ensure any diamond you buy has GIA certification, Gemological Institute of America.
The gold standard.
It is. It provides assurance of its quality, its authenticity. That's invaluable both for your peace of mind and for resale later on. And beyond that, get it valued by a trusted independent jeweler. Get another objective assessment. It gives you extra confidence.
Those are incredibly practical insights. Thanks. Now let's bring these concepts to life a bit. Let's shine a spotlight on a few of those spectacular examples from the top 21 list. These diamonds really illustrate the value drivers we've been talking about. What makes them such remarkable assets?
Absolutely. Let's kick off with the Pink Star. Famously fetched $71.2
million. $71
million. Yeah. And this isn't just a big diamond. It's the largest, flawless, vivid pink diamond ever discovered. 59.6 carats. Its staggering price tag isn't just a number. It's a profound insight into what truly drives value. It's that unprecedented combination, immense size, flawless clarity, and the extreme rarity of that vivid pink hue.
So it hits all the marks. Size, quality, color, rarity.
Exactly. This diamond teaches us that when extreme scarcity meets undeniable beauty, the market just sets entirely new benchmarks.
The perfect storm, like you said earlier. And I remember reading there was another incredible pink diamond that also broke records.
Yes, the Williamson Pink Star,
sold for $57.7 million.
Still huge numbers.
Huge. This one was internally flawless, fancy vivid, 11.5 carats. Smaller, but...
But amazing quality.
Incredible quality. And it came from the same Tanzanian mine that actually gifted a diamond to Queen Elizabeth II.
Wow, that adds to the story.
It does. And this one set a record for value by carat. $5 million per carat.
$5 million per carat.
Per carat. It highlights that while sheer size matters, that per carat value can just skyrocket when a diamond has such intense color and flawless clarity. It proves even a, quote, smaller gem can be astronomically valuable if its quality is just exceptional.
That's a fantastic point about per carat value.
Yeah.
Shifts the focus from just raw size to the intrinsic quality, the rarity density, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
What about blue diamonds? Are they up there too?
Oh, yes. Very much so. Take the Oppenheimer Blue Diamond, sold for $57.5 million.
Almost the same as the Williamson Pink Star.
Very close. This was the largest fancy vivid blue ever auctioned at the time. And the name, it belonged to the Oppenheimer family, who used to own the Beers. So color, size, and history all playing a role.
And didn't another big blue sell more recently? Something from De Beers?
You're thinking of the De Beers Cullinan Blue, fetched $57.4 million, unearthed only in 2021, sold in April 2022.
Right around the start of the war in Ukraine.
Exactly. It set a record at the time. Again, exceptional rarity, vivid color, flawless nature.
It's amazing how these top stones cluster in price, despite different colors and sizes.
It shows how the market values that peak rarity. Let me throw in one more color quickly. The orange.
An orange diamond.
A rare, pure orange diamond sold for $35.5 million. It set a record for the highest per carat price for any colored diamond at the time. Just shows how any truly rare, intense color can command huge prices.
Fascinating. Okay, and what about the big white ones, the colorless ones? Can they compete?
They absolutely can, but like we said, the criteria are even stricter. Remember, the largest diamond ever sold.
The one without a fancy name.
That's the one. A white 118.28 carat oval diamond have fetched $30.6 million. What's remarkable here is just its sheer size and flawless nature. It holds the title. Largest and most valuable colorless diamond auctioned in Asia. This piece illustrates that for white diamonds, it's that unparalleled combination, massive size, perfect clarity, exceptional cut that commands those staggering prices, miles beyond the common 1 or 2 carat stones.
So scale becomes incredibly important for colorless diamonds.
Hugely important. Can I mention one more with a great story?
Please do.
The Wittelsbach Graff Diamond. Sold for $24.3 million. This one has serious history. It dates back to the 1600s, part of European crown jewels.
Okay, so major provenance.
Major. And then Lawrence Graff, the jeweler who bought it, famously had it recut.
Recut. Didn't that reduce the size?
It did. It lost over 4 carats. But the recutting significantly improved its clarity and color grade, and its value actually increased substantially.
Wow. So sometimes altering history can enhance value if done right.
It's controversial, but in this case, the market clearly valued the improved quality over the original carat weight and historical cut. A fascinating case study.
It really is. Incredible how each of these stories reinforces those unique characteristics driving value. But, you know, value isn't just shaped by intrinsic qualities. External forces play a massive role.
Definitely.
Let's pivot now to a really significant ongoing factor.
Yeah.
The impact of the conflict in Ukraine on the diamond industry.
Yes, this is a profound and ongoing disruption. You really can't overstate it. Russia accounts for a substantial chunk of global rough diamond supplies. Maybe 25-30%.
A quarter to a third of the world supply.
Roughly, yeah. Now, the sanctions placed on the Russian producer, Alrosa, specifically by the U.S. government, putting them on the OFAC, Specially Designated Nationals list, the SDN list.
Which has huge global implications.
Huge. It effectively makes it illegal for most international banks to process any transactions with them. So payments just can't happen. It's essentially cut off a massive supply line from the market.
So it's not just companies taking a moral stance. It's a practical financial impossibility for much of the global system to deal with these Russian diamonds now.
That's a big part of it, yes. The banking restrictions are key.
What kind of ripple effect does that have down the chain?
Oh, the ripple effect is widespread.
Yeah.
And deeply impactful. Think about India, for example. We mentioned they polish most rough diamonds globally.
Right.
Historically, many of those came from Russia. So India is hit hardest. This directly impacts an estimated, 2 to 3 million people, workers in polishing centers, their families.
A huge human cost.
Enormous. And then beyond the legal sanctions, you have many brands and retailers proactively avoiding polished diamonds of Russian origin anyway. Ethical concerns, consumer pressure,
it further constricts those supply channels.
So multiple layers restricting supply.
Exactly. And the net result, a substantial shortage of natural diamonds in the market. This inevitably leads to a pretty dramatic increase in prices for natural stones, especially for those investment-grade pieces we've been talking about. Their scarcity becomes even more pronounced.
Which, ironically, might make LGDs look more appealing.
In the short term, maybe. For consumers just looking for jewelry, lab-grown diamonds might look more attractive as an immediate alternative if natural prices are spiking. However, and we have to keep reiterating this while they fill a consumer demand, their fundamental lack of scarcity means they just don't share the same investment potential, especially not compared to truly rare natural diamonds, which are now potentially even more valuable because of these geopolitical forces.
Right. The underlying investment logic hasn't changed.
Not all.
Wow. This has been a truly illuminating deep dive. We've explored how the diamond market is just so much more complex than just sparkle and shine, isn't it?
It really is.
We've seen that clear distinction between everyday retail diamonds and the truly investment-grade stones. Their value shaped by this intricate dance of rarity, unique history, quality, and even, well, unpredictable geopolitical events.
Mm-hmm.
It's a world of both immense beauty and some pretty hard economics.
Indeed. And it makes you think, doesn't it? Considering this unique blend, geological wonder, intricate craftsmanship, powerful market forces we've discussed today, how do you think the definition of value in a diamond might continue to evolve, especially as new technologies, like maybe better LGDs or detection methods, emerge, and as global dynamics keep shifting?
That is a powerful question to leave with. Mm. Really makes you consider that interplay between intrinsic worth and perceived value,
uh-huh.
and how it might change. It's clear that understanding the diamond market means looking far beyond the sparkle. We hope this deep dive has given all of you a much clearer, more informed perspective.